You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Good morning, folks.
Morning, Dan and Danette.
Morning.
Here we are, another day, another Dan Patrick Show. If you'd like to watch, Peacock.
Peacock. I like the way you say Peacock.
If you want to listen later, download the podcast.
Download.
Download. But right now, 3 hours live of the best sports talk on the air. Welcome to the Dan Patrick Show.
I love Dan Patrick. Oh, my God.
Home to the biggest guests and best sports talk on radio.
I love it.
One of my favorites.
Normally, home to Dan Patrick.
Hope you'll miss us.
But today, Dan and the Danettes are off.
Don't see another radio show behind my back, please.
And filling in, it's Doug Gottlieb and Rob Parker.
It's good.
Broadcasting from the Mercedes Man Cave, this is the Dan Patrick Show.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Dan Patrick Show, Fox Sports Radio. My man Rob Parker, Doug Gottlieb, in for Dan and the Danettes. Yes, I know. Gottlieb, got me. Presented by AMG. What up, Rob? How are you?
I'm great, Doug. Good morning. How are you?
Things could not be better in sunny Southern California. It's a little windy, a little bit, but when you consider... Right. When you consider what the rest of the country is going through otherwise, you're like, yeah, it's not so bad, you know?
Especially when you see what the people of Texas, and I have friends down there, and a friend of mine lives in Dallas, and, you know, he's a former New Yorker living down there, thought he got away from, you know, the winter and everything, and, you know, no power and sleeping in the cold, wearing three sets of clothes, there's no hotels to go to. Just a mess. So hopefully everybody will bounce back from that terrible storm that hit that area.
Man, I mean, it's just one thing after the next. He's Rob Parker. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Let me start with a story which I think we knew was out there, but it's always interesting how some people handle a press conference, right? I mean, that's really, especially, it's the wording that is most interesting when you look at the Ben Roethlisberger story. So Kevin Colbert is the general manager of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They had a press conference yesterday, and among the topics discussed was their quarterback position and Ben Roethlisberger's future. Take a listen to what Colbert had to say. Oh, I'm sorry. He basically said, like, look, Ben has expressed his opinion to want to come back, and we're not so sure if we want him back. He's like, wait, listen, there's some financial stuff to it, and we got to figure it out, whatever. There wasn't a Ben Roethlisberger's a Steeler for life. As long as he wants to play, we'll find a place for him. Do you think he's done in Pittsburgh?
I think if they can find a viable option, Doug, that they will move away from him. Obviously, you just can't cut bait if you don't have anybody. But this isn't – I don't know why people think this is strange. Most quarterbacks – I'm talking about great quarterbacks – wind up somewhere else to finish their career. We've seen it in the NFL forever. We just saw it with Tom Brady, right? You would think of anybody – that the Patriots would have said, well, he's not going to wear another uniform, you know. Oh, no, he's going to be here. Peyton Manning, we know that there was an injury involved, but Peyton Manning had to move on. We could go back to Joe Namath. We could go, I mean, I could just.
Joe Montana.
Joe Montana, who won 4 Super Bowls for an organization, was 4-0. He had to go to Kansas City. So is this new? No, this isn't new. And guys want to play longer, and teams decide that, you know, they're ready to move on. So I'm not surprised at all. And I never bought into the Steelers last year. I know they were 11-0. Doug, you know me. I'd like to maybe go over the top a little bit. I called them the worst 11-0 team I had ever seen. And I think I was
just
right.
A little over the top, yeah.
Yeah, just a little.
They lost two linebackers. They lost Bud Dupree and lost Devin Bush.
I just wasn't impressed.
A different team.
Even when they were winning some of the games, I remember they struggled against the lowly Cowboys. There were some games Baltimore was missing like 17 or 18 people with COVID, and they barely beat them. When they beat the Ravens, I think the Ravens had 4 turnovers. gave them the ball, you know, gave the ball away, and they beat the Ravens by four. So I just wasn't that impressed with where they were.
No, I mean, it's pretty obvious that the Steelers themselves know that Ben is he's not playing for anybody else because of the way that contract is written. Right, there's just too much dead cap money. Right now, I'm sure they're thinking, as it stands, we're better off with him retiring. If he retires, then all of a sudden we can get a little bit of cap relief, whereas we can't. Doesn't mean it goes away. You still end up having to pay it. You can just find different ways. There's other ways to do it. If he comes back, they got to rework the contract, which is basically feels like a little bit of a leverage play where they're like, yeah, you know, we could move on or we could not move on. Did feel like a little bit of negotiation in public. I guess to me, there's like three or four levels to it. One, I think it's why what the Packers did last year in the NFL draft continues to be the smart thing, even if it's not the popular thing with Aaron Rodgers or in the media. Two, because the Steelers tried to do the exact same thing, only Mason Rudolph was a third round pick and he's just not good enough, right? They haven't been able to find that replacement in the draft because they haven't used draft capital to draft a first round draft pick quarterback. And maybe now they think the free agent market is the way to go. Two, I mean, I do think this is just a public negotiation because it just get, you know, Ben wants to come back and I think you have to take him back, but only if it's at some massively discounted rate. They have so many other issues. The last part, which is interesting, is, you know, I had Juju Smith-Schuster on my show and he said he hadn't talked to Ben. The reports are people in the organization haven't talked to Ben. So it's weird to try and figure out like what would Ben possibly be upset about, other than the fact that, you know, they're going to pay him less money, you know, to play the position that he has a chance to make less money or zero money, based upon what his futures are in Pittsburgh.
Right, and it's not like they finished in a blaze of glory or anything. Do you know, like, I think everything's all relative, and you have to be able to. Look at your situation and figure it out. I always think, Doug, the worst, knowing where you fit in and knowing the situation, I think the worst I ever saw was Hervé Villechaize. Remember him?
No.
He was Tattoo on Fantasy Island.
Okay. I know who Tattoo is in Fantasy Island. Yes.
He's on a popular TV sitcom making money.
Right.
Right?
Right.
He has like two lines, the plane.
The plane, yes.
Exactly. He talked his way out of a contract at ABC because he wanted equal money to Ricardo Montalban, who was the star of the show, and wound up with nothing, no TV show. And I'm like, how do you talk yourself out of a show when you have a limited dialogue, you know, and limited lines, and you got to know where you fit in? So if I'm Ben, he can't be mad at the organization and a 39-year-old quarterback who really can't move around, who finished up a season that looked terrible and lost a playoff game. So I just think you got to, you know, let down, be humble a little bit, understand what's going on here. You're at the end of the line. And if you really want to finish it and play one more year in Pittsburgh, then you got to kind of work with them.
Yeah, no, I think – It's actually, there's some similarities even to the J.J. Watt deal. It's like, I want to play for a winner. Like, okay, well, if we want to play for a winner, we know which teams you want to play for. You're just going to have to play for less money. Well, I want to just keep playing. Ben said, like, money doesn't really mean anything. Like, okay, don't just tell us, show us, right? Like, what's the least you will play for? And then let's work with that. That's kind of where we are. You know, so and I would get it. Like, there's a pride factor to it. Whether or not you actually need the money or not, there's got to be a pride factor.
There's no doubt, Doug. You know that. It just doesn't feel right. You know, like, oh man, they want to take my money or they want me to work here for less money. You know, there is, and people can say, oh, he has all the money in the world in the bank. It still doesn't feel good. I don't care what anybody says.
There's zero chance it feels good. So, okay, so here's my question, and we're going to take you to people of Pittsburgh upcoming next. In your opinion, Rob Parker, is Ben Roethlisberger the starting quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers next year?
No way, no how. I don't know who's going to be. Is it? Are they going to give Haskins a chance? This kid was a first round pick. I know it blew up in his face in D.C. And he had maturity issues, Doug. You know, can they figure him out and somehow get lucky? They didn't bring him there just to try on the uniform. They must feel like maybe we can do something with him. Maybe there is something there, and maybe we're the ones who are able to get it out of him. And maybe this kid will mature and it'll snap in line that he's facing maybe his NFL career being over before it really got started. So he might, you know, dive into it.
Okay. Well, look, I'm going to say no.
I'm just saying.
Well, what you have to understand is they just hired new offense coordinator Matt Canada. Okay. So Matt Canada was the offense coordinator of the Pitt Panthers when they beat Clemson. That was when Deshaun Watson lost at home to Pittsburgh. That's who the offense coordinator was. Then Matt Canada went to LSU, and that was the year before they had Joe Burrow, and his offense was too advanced for the personnel that they had. It was complete change from what they had been doing at LSU. But he's really well regarded, especially in Pittsburgh, where he had his greatest kind of personal success, with the Pitt Panthers. And of course, he's rebuilt it since. I think that he ain't gonna want Haskins. And if you listen to that press conference, this is Kevin Colbert, the general manager of the Steelers, talking about their new offensive coordinator.
He reiterated that to us, that he wants to continue to play. And we told him, quite frankly, we have to look at this current situation. With Ben's current cap number, some adjustment will have to be made. And we're not negotiating as we sit here and answer this question. You know, Ben Roethlisberger is on the team. Ben Roethlisberger did a lot of really good things last year, and we anticipate that he could still do some good things moving forward. So hopefully there's a way that we can try to figure out and do what's best for the organization and do what's best for Ben. And hopefully he'll be able to see that and feel the same way we do. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah, I'm like, there's a new offense coordinator, although they are familiar with one another. I don't know. I think Haskins was just a dumpster dive, right? That he was on the market for basically nothing to take a look, and you take a look, and then you can always see it costs you nothing if you want to cut him heading forward.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Rob, did you see this Jalen Johnson story, the Duke freshman who opted out 2 days ago of the Duke season?
Yes, and I know it got a lot of people's panties in a bunch, people ripping him, quitting on his team.
He did.
All about himself, right?
He is. I don't know if it's all about him. Yeah, I mean, it's all about himself. But yeah, I mean, quit on his team is basically kind of the premise of it. I mean, so for people who don't know the story, he's a very talented, highly touted recruit, probably the most highly touted recruit from a disappointing Duke squad. And
yeah, they're really bad this year, right? No tournament.
Well, as of now, no NCAA tournament, but there's, they're like at 500. There's no reason they can't. The ACC is not very good. There's no reason they couldn't finish strong and potentially get in.
Okay.
And they played better. So he got in his last game, he only played 8 minutes, and they won. They played well. They beat NC State. And apparently he cleaned out his locker and said he's opting out. And Mike Krzyzewski said, hey, probably best decision for him in his future because coaches are handcuffed by he'll be judged as a meanie if he says what he really thinks, which is what everybody else says. Like, really? You got 7 games left, 6 regular season, at minimum 1 ACC tournament game, and you're going to leave because of a little adversity? Like, what are you doing? What exactly? And so that would be the universal reaction within the sport, of course. What do you think, Rob?
I get it. I mean, I think a lot of kids go to college, like the big-time recruits. They don't need college anymore, Doug. LaMelo Ball didn't play. Weissman played how many games in college? 4? How about Kyrie played 9 or 11?
Now, Kyrie came back from – he played 10. He came back from injury. Zion came back from injury. Right. But I think that's actually – the point you make is a good one, but it actually helps – the point that I'm going to make which is even stronger, which is you're right. You don't necessarily need college. You don't have to go. There's a G League Ignite team where several of the of his brethren of high school All-Americans have chosen to
take the $500,000 or whatever.
It's not all 500, but yeah, right. To take the money and go.
Right.
The difference is he had that opportunity. He instead committed several times over to go to Duke. He's already at Duke. He's on the team. Things get tough, and he's like, "I'm out." It's indefensible because it wasn't his only option. This was the option he chose.
Yeah, but
he chose
also,
not to fulfill his obligation.
Okay, but he have schools not always fulfilled their obligations to players? Have there been situations where they don't, you know, they think a guy maybe didn't live up to what they wanted, or they ask him to move on, or whatever?
Sure,
take their scholarship.
Sure, at year's end. So, I mean, now look, for people who do the old school, hey, scholarships are only 1 year and they can cut you anytime. No, they actually can't. They're all 4 year, and you can, and here's the thing, he can actually come back to Duke anytime he wants and still be on full scholarship. That's actually an NCAA rule that they have to. So all the benefits are in the favor of the student athlete and not in the school. And all we ask is like, hey man, you just finish up strong and you're good, right? You're good. It's right. The doing it with 6.5, 7 games left in the season.
But it also is his decision, and people have a right, if something isn't what they thought it would be, to back out of a situation. You don't want to be there if your heart is not in it. I don't even want anybody to be around if they're not going to give their all or they don't feel. I remember when Pat Riley coached the Knicks, and I always use this because I do believe – what he was saying, and not that he won a championship with the Knicks or whatever, but it was like, Doug, either you're in or you're out. There's no like, okay, I'm going to go through the motions. I don't really want to be here. This sucks, whatever. I don't want that guy. I'd rather
I'm sure Duke is probably going to be better off, right?
Right.
I mean, just, and they'll feel better about their season. But that's not the point. The point is that this is the learning lesson for him. This is the whole reason you go to college, is to be coached by Mike Krzyzewski. And sometimes being coached is, hey man, those guys aren't as talented as you, but they're a better team, so you have to sit here and watch. Famous Abe Lemons, you say there's a curious relationship between your backside and your brain. You sit in your ass, and all of a sudden you learn something, right? That's the whole reason you go to college. And the idea that, and his mom and dad were players too. They both played at UW-Milwaukee. Like the idea that nobody in his life is like, hey, dude, sit there, tough it out. You'll get another opportunity here. You got 7 games left. He's going to play you. You learn, you get better. And if not, you're still going to be an NBA draft pick instead. And look, if this is his decision, that's fine. You're allowed to. But this is kind of like freedom of speech. You're free to make big boy adult decisions. We're also free to judge you for those big boy adult decisions.
No, I'm not against people if they want to rip them or judge them or whatever. But ultimately, at the end of the day, he has to live with his decisions, his decision to go to Duke, his decision to pull the plug on Duke. And I'm always going to stand up for a person who decides what's best for them. Nobody knows what's going on internally, where his head is. Maybe he just,
that's the problem,
commit.
Is where his head is. The problem is that this is, you have people like, well, he's protecting his investment. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Why is that dumb? That's not dumb. Why is he not playing? And he's going to be a guy who has a shot at the league, and it's going to be, could be a lottery pick. I mean,
sure.
Right?
So tell me how he's protecting his investment.
We got an 8-8 squad or whatever the record is, and I'm not playing here.
Yeah.
And everybody's telling me I'm going to the league.
The problem is everyone who's telling him stuff. Instead, if he would just lock in at Duke, earn more minutes, he would only improve his stock. The whole thing about college athletics is not only do they get you into a school you probably couldn't get into, not only do they pay for a school that
not
you couldn't
everybody,
afford.
Not everybody, Doug. Don't broad brush.
I couldn't have gotten into Notre Dame with that basketball.
Really?
I'm telling you, no. Do you know how hard it is to get into Notre Dame? I mean, get out of here.
Well, we would have let you in at Southern Connecticut State University. You could have got in there.
Yeah, because that had a pulse. But Duke and Notre Dame and UCLA and Stanford and all these schools, Virginia, they're ridiculously difficult. North Carolina, they're like Ivy League to get into. And one of the unspoken benefits of playing college athletics is getting into a university that had you been locked out of previously. That's a huge benefit to it. Then you get there, and not only is everything covered, but then you get the best coaching. And look, all you got to do is, but this is a great learning moment. But if you're talking about his future, the best way to invest in your future is to earn minutes on the court for Duke, because then you play in these televised games. Now you go off into the ether, and now they're still going to call Duke and say, okay, what's the deal here? Or they'll call John Shire, the assistant, like, look, he's a good kid, but he has no idea how to deal with any sort of adversity. And first time we benched him, he walked away. What do you think they're going to say?
You think that'll stop him from getting any NBA?
No, but do I think it helps his brand? Do I think it protects his investment? I don't.
But I don't think it's going to hurt him ultimately. That's the problem. That's the situation.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Okay, so I saw this story and I saw your reaction. By the way, if you like us, this is cool, because Rob has The Odd Couple. He and Chris Broussard, awesome show, starts at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, or your iHeart Radio app. And I have The Doug Gottlieb Show. It's 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, same deal. So there's other places. I saw a little blurb about your rant. So Tim Tebow retires from baseball, and it wasn't a complete disaster. He's just not a major league player. Sports are hard. He never gets to the bigs. Now, part of it is they have new ownership. I think they want to legitimize themselves, and they felt like it was a dog and pony show. But nonetheless, Tim Tebow calls it a day in the minor leagues. What's your reaction, Rob?
Yeah, I think Tim Tebow's career, just sports career, was a bust when you look at it. Nobody, Doug, got more play, pub, and love and did as little with it. And what I mean is the NFL, he's drafted in the first round. Denver gives up 3 picks to Baltimore. Other general managers and people are shaking their heads. They can't believe what Denver did to draft Tim Tebow 25th in the first round. What they saw that other people didn't see. And you got to remember, Josh McDaniels, John Elway, you know, these people were like, Josh McDaniels swore by Tim Tebow, who, and I'm talking about NFL guys, not me, who watched his practices and questioned whether he could make a 15-yard pass consistently in the NFL. Couldn't throw the football. And wound up people being, you know, going gaga. It didn't matter what the situation was or the game. They like him, and I get it. And even the baseball, he didn't even deserve that opportunity. The Mets had, you said it, dog and pony show. They thought they maybe could make some money off of him, and they gave him an opportunity. He was in 4 spring trainings, batted 151, 1 home run in 34 spring games. They flirted. The Mets were bad 1 year, really bad, and they flirted with promoting him, but even they couldn't do it from a credibility standpoint of promoting him to the big leagues because he hadn't earned it. He just wasn't good enough. But this guy has been given more chances and more opportunities than anybody, and I think they were unwarranted. Was he a great college football player, Doug? Yes, at Florida. Was a part of 2 championship teams. He won a Heisman Trophy. I'll never take away his college career. But it doesn't mean you're going to have a career in the NFL and definitely not Major League Baseball. It's just very hard. And most guys who are away from the game for 10 years would have never been given a spot. He was never on the 40-man roster, but never a Major League minor league spot. And his brightest shining moment was his first instructional league at bat. He hits a home run against the St. Louis Cardinals. People go crazy. You remember he had a number one selling jersey in baseball for a hot minute, right, when he signed with the Mets. But other than that, it was a lot of fluff, no real stuff.
No, he's not a baseball player, and you can't.
And he wasn't a football player either. He wasn't the quarterback.
I also think that I don't think it's one of those things where it's like there's nuance to everything here, right? It's like if I say he had bad feet as a quarterback, you're like, wait a second, he ran a 4.6. Like, yeah, but it's a completely different type of athleticism needed within the pocket in terms of having nimble feet. He actually had bad feet and bad footwork, and that's one reason that he couldn't evolve as a passer. He also didn't read a defense, right? He wasn't seen as a terribly bright dude that could come in and really the offense that he was capable of running in the NFL was very, very simple. And it was basically one read. If you don't like it, tuck and run the football. That said, he did win a playoff game somehow. They did have that crazy, miraculous season, which most of them were against bad teams, right? And he would get credit for it. Was the Tim Tebow was getting credit for putting out a fire that you started, right? Like,
right,
wow,
right.
They had a great comeback. Three and a half
bad quarters, right? And then there would be this drive where he gets them. And Phil, I remember their kicker kicked like a 68-yard field goal to win the game. And guess who the camera was on after
Tim
the kick?
Tebow.
Right? Tim Tebow. He got him in position.
There was brilliance to it in that the style of football that they used, okay, it's the Ravens are just a much better version of it, right? You have the best kicker in football. They had the best kicker in football. You got a great defense. And when you run the football a ton, you shorten the game. Fewer possessions allows your defense to be even more aggressive. The problem is when you get behind, you'll get some zone coverage and get some underneath stuff. But by design, you want to get ahead and shorten the game. And it worked for a short period of time. Obviously, the Ravens are a much better version, and they're much more invested in it. Lamar Jackson's a much better thrower. But it's the same idea and same kind of game plan and style of football.
Lamar was a unanimous MVP. Tim Tebow wasn't.
Right, look, Tim Tebow can't throw a football. Lamar can, but Lamar has things that are holding him back in terms of the volume of throws. And they need to go get him a better wide receiver. Like, no free agent's going to sign there. They don't throw the football enough. So they have to draft one. And when you draft, it's very much hit or miss whether or not the guy is going to be a star wide receiver, especially when you have other holes on your football team you need to fill. Do you fill one with a wide receiver? So it's a big question. Like, look, Eddie Royal left the Denver Broncos after they won the playoffs. Why? Because he couldn't get enough balls. He went to San Diego at the time. There's a limiting factor to it. But I wouldn't say it's a come a bust. I don't know.
Why is he not? Did he didn't live up to anything. He was a first round pick in the NFL, right? I thought he was
overdrafted. Would be fair.
Okay, if you want to say that, but somebody had expectations. They gave him they had expectations for this guy, and he didn't live up to any of them. And he got a lot of love, and a lot of opportunities. Would if it was anybody else rather than Tim Tebow, a guy that people like. And guy they thought, would they have been given that baseball opportunity? Probably not.
I don't know. I mean, I think Johnny Manziel would have gotten a similar baseball opportunity. You know, a lot of these guys would have. So why is it such a sinister thing that he was bringing attention to minor league baseball that we don't pay any attention to?
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. That's not.
And, what do you mean? Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because that's not going to
matter. We've had
minor league baseball. Nobody. You know what? You can talk about all you want. Oh yeah. Well, Tim Tebow's on. Please show me the data that Tim Tebow changed minor league baseball.
But you just said that for a period of time he had the best selling jersey in baseball.
I get that, but ultimately
you said tell me the data. There's your data that he was super popular.
No, but my
attention.
Point is...
Of attention to minor league baseball, which is dying right now, and it has been dying for years, and COVID's only made worse, okay? Any attention is good attention, okay? It actually is a genius I'm in the cost-benefit analysis. I'm sure the Mets got way more out of it, and all their minor league franchises got way more out of it, and so did the competition. If it gets five people to come to the park, then it's a win because there's nobody else. There's no other names in minor league baseball. You're simply trying to go and find out and learn about a guy that maybe someday becomes a player.
If that's what you want to hang your hat on, fine. But as far as credibility of an organization, you just can't be doing that to try to sell tickets. And even the Mets didn't do it. I give them credit. When they had a chance to bring Tebow up and maybe sell some extra ducats and get people to tune into a bad team, they didn't do it because you hurt your franchise and your credibility by putting people who don't deserve it. Making it to the major leagues is a real deal. And it shouldn't be. You shouldn't be jumping over people who have put in their time and effort and really made, tried to do what they needed to do to get to that next level. And just because he's a popular guy and people like him and they know him because he was a college football star shouldn't be the reason why.
He's retiring. Why does Tim Tebow bother you so much?
Because he got opportunities that I don't think even at the college
who
football.
Else? Wait, who else? I want to say Heisman Trophy winner hasn't gotten opportunities?
Like a Charlie Ward had no place in the NFL, and all of a sudden they were going to make room and do whatever they could to utilize a guy who couldn't throw the football. There were plenty of black quarterbacks, especially I just gave you Charlie Ward won a Heisman. He wasn't even drafted. All right,
Hold on. This is the problem, Rob. First of all, how old is Charlie Ward? What year was Charlie Ward?
That doesn't matter. He was yes, a Heisman Trophy.
Yes, it absolutely does.
They bent over backwards for Tim Tebow, and he wasn't worth it. He wasn't good enough.
When he wasn't good enough, he got cut. That's what happened to any of these quarterbacks. Right, you don't think Vince Young got opportunities he shouldn't have gotten because of he was a superstar at Texas?
Of course he did. You think
Vince Young and Tim Tebow are the same guy in the NFL?
Coming out of college, they're the same guy. Come on, Doug, they're not. Young was going to be drafted higher. Tebow.
He flamed out just like Tebow did.
Yeah, but flaming out once you get there. But I'm talking about
Denver moving up
for Tim Tebow, giving up three picks on draft night. Nobody saw that. Nobody.
Here's what you're doing. Okay, you're taking the criticism of the NFL and, in your opinion, the treatment of black quarterbacks for years and saying that Tim Tebow is the perfect example. That's bull, dude. You know it's bull. It's not true. Okay, all these good college quarterbacks have gotten opportunities, and if they're good, they stick, and if they don't, they go home. Okay, that's the way it works. Okay, there's from the Dennis Dixons to the Vince Youngs to the you pick the quarterback, it doesn't matter. We're critical of these guys. A lot of them get overdrafted, regardless of skin color, right? I mean, hell, Jamarcus Russell is the number one overall pick. He didn't flame out of the NFL.
He was a bust. Tebow was a bust.
But he wasn't the number one overall pick. Again, you're criticizing the opportunities he's gotten.
Was he a bust? Yes or no, Doug? He wasn't a bust? What was he?
I don't think he was ever as good as the Tebow time thing, but I don't understand the piling on over he had a bad... He wasn't as good as a first-round pick, but he did start and win a playoff game. So it's a really hard one because I agree with you. He wasn't a good quarterback. I agree with you. He probably should have switched positions. Okay. But the idea that he got what you're saying without saying is
no, I'm saying it.
So why did he get the opportunities? Because people liked him, right?
Because people liked him. Yes. Okay. And I don't
life
think
is a popularity contest on some level, whether you like it or not. Shouldn't be. And then it becomes a meritocracy once you get into the NFL, right? That's how it works. Yeah. If you're good enough, you stick, and if you don't, you go home.
It's the same thing. People now will paint this, he gave it the old college try, and Tim Tebow, and now, I'm retiring because I'm being pulled in all these different directions. No, you're not. You're not good enough. That's why you're retiring. Not because there's other things that you want to do. You're not good enough. You're not going to make the major leagues. You weren't good enough in the NFL. That's all. Why can't we be real and talk about Tim Tebow in real terms. He failed in the NFL. He failed in the minor leagues and Major League Baseball. That's all I'm saying, Doug. Let's stop sugarcoating it and call it what it is. He failed as a professional athlete two times over. That's all I'm saying.
I guess I don't understand the vitriol towards Tim Tebow in particular.
It's not. I do it to everybody. I do it to everybody. Have you heard me talk about Tom Brady? Have you heard me talk about Steph Curry? Yeah.
The idea that Tom Brady somehow is like the luckiest guy of all time.
He's the luckiest of all time.
Okay, he's been to 10 Super like everybody
That's
else.
Rob Parker.
Yeah, there's one that's like, you're literally alone on an island. There is not a single human being on earth that agrees with you, but that's okay. But again, the point is more, did he achieve what a first round draft pick should achieve as a quarterback? No. Okay. But he did start. He did win a playoff game. He achieved more than a lot of other guys did. I never thought he was an NFL quarterback. I agree with you, but I don't have any sort of vitriol towards him trying baseball and kind of hyping up, making people come to minor league games for whatever reason they wanted to come and see Tim Tebow, and it didn't work out. I also have a great amount of respect for guys that, you know, it's only crazy until it happens, right? And I don't have any sort of vitriol towards Tim Tebow. I just don't. He hung him up. Professional sports is really, 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 really hard.
Why do you think he's stepping aside from baseball? Why?
Because at some point you go like, I can't do it. It's hard. It's hard. It's not fulfilling. I also think minor league baseball, they're cutting teams left and right. I think there's a myriad of reasons to it. But you're not wrong for saying, for saying that he's not good enough at professional baseball. I don't necessarily know if I would do the he's a failure. His OPS was like 667, which is not terrible. He's not a terrible minor league baseball player. He's just not good enough to make the pros because professional baseball is really, really, really hard.
Right.
You can't stick in the NFL because it's really, 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 really hard.
To hit a baseball, right? It just is.
It's crazy hard. Yes. Crazy hard.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Doug Gottlieb and Rob Parker in for Dan and the Danettes, the Dan Patrick Show, Fox Sports Radio. It feels like a yearly occurrence, right, where we're just minding our own business, getting ready for baseball season, and then some young player signs a contract which kind of blows the previous ones out of the water in terms of years length. Last year, it was Mike Trout, right?
Yep.
We had the Trout deal, the Bryce Harper deal. We've had some of these deals. Yesterday, it was the Fernando Tatis deal. Now, Tatis, of course, has only played two seasons, really, 140-some-odd games, I think 142 games in his entire career. And if you know how baseball works, you're arbitration eligible in your, your fourth and fifth year as a player. And then, of course, by your sixth year, you can become an unrestricted free agent. So you're not making much until you hit the years four and years five. But the Padres is like, the hell with that. Let's give him $10 million up front. That's what the signing bonus was. And then backload everything and slowly work our way into a big boy contract. And that's the deal. What does it mean for the Padres? What does it mean for baseball? What does it mean in the NL West? Let's welcome in Dennis Lynn, Padres reporter for The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at Dennis T. Lynn. He joins us in the Dan Patrick Show, presented by Mercedes-Benz AMG. Dennis, what's your reaction, though, to signing this deal now, that the Padres chose now to lock him up long-term so early in his career?
Well, I'm not surprised that it happened now. They've been talking about this for quite a while now. Tatis expressed a lot of interest early on in trying to stay in San Diego long term. I am surprised, however, by the scope, just the magnitude of the deal. Again, like you said, he's played about 140 games in the majors, and now he just got the longest contract in Major League history at 14 years. I think he was about 14. If you're talking about the length of his deal, he was 14 years old when A.J. Preller, Padres general manager, first saw him in the Dominican. So you just think about that, it's kind of crazy. But I think baseball is, you know, pushing toward this, toward paying younger players in their prime when they're still productive, and that's probably going to show up in the next CBA this coming winter. So we'll see how much of an effect this deal has the rest of the market, but for Tatis, it's a major win for sure.
Tatis Jr. has taken, in just two seasons, baseball by storm. I mean, he is has the swag. He plays defense. He hits home runs. I mean, are people in San Diego and just are they just thrilled? Like the Padres, they went out, they signed Machado to that big deal. People thought they were crazy. And look at what they put together. And then all the offseason moves with bringing pitching to that team. Where's the expectation level now for the Padres?
It's higher than it's ever been. The Dodgers are still the Dodgers, which is a really formidable obstacle that's always going to be there. But the Padres wouldn't have gone out and done all this offseason, including now this. I know this is more long-term, but they think they can win the division or else they wouldn't have done this. I know a lot of people are saying they're going to still be competing for, you know, second place or a wild card.
I think they can win the division. I really do. The Dodgers have won it 8 years in a row, and I know they got Bauer. But the Padres last year, Doug, I don't know if you noticed, only two teams scored more runs than the Padres last year. And it was the Rays and the Dodgers who were in the World Series. So they were right there. They have an offense, and they added three stud starters to their rotation.
Yeah, look, I get it all. I don't understand why you want to do this so early. I guess the other question is 14 years. Like, look, the dude's a total badass, right? Clearly, he's got some swag. It's just there's a different gait to his walk. There's a coolness to it, no question. Are we sure, though, that he's going to be as invested, Dennis, 10 years into a deal as he is in year one?
That's an interesting question. I think he was always of the mind this is going to happen for him eventually. And there's no opt-outs in this deal. There's a full no-trade clause. So he's not going anywhere. And he already got paid, like you said, possibly too early in the opinion of a lot of people in baseball. But, he's talked for a long time about wanting to be transcendent star, not just in baseball, but just sports in general, inspiring people to play baseball. So I think you have to win a World Series to really capture that full potential. So I do think he's intrinsically motivated to do that, and that's why the Padres felt so comfortable doing this deal.
You know what's crazy about this whole thing? The Padres fans, since they opened Petco, they haven't really been competitive, right?
Now it's
they
a great ballpark.
It's amazing, right? It's amazing. I mean, like the reason the Chargers left was they wanted Petco for football, right?
Right.
we already got Petco. Anyway, they finally, and you haven't been able to see this team, right? That's the crazy part. Financially, Dennis, does it work for the Padres? It's a smaller market. This is their second long-term huge money deal. Is it going to work financially for the team?
Well, essentially, they're betting that if they're spending a lot of money now, when a lot of teams are kind of going in the opposite direction, and like you said, this market's pretty unique. No football team anymore, of course, and they do have a pretty strong advertising revenue from Petco and everything else that goes into that. They think that if this works out, they do win a World Series or contend for World Series in the next couple of years, they will get a major windfall when fans come back to the ballpark, whenever that is, and people are turning their attention to Fernando Tatis Jr., possibly the best player in the sport.
How about the pitching that they picked up? Blake Snell, Yu Darvish, and Joe Musgrove. I mean, they picked up all those three guys. Obviously, Clevinger's not going to pitch this year, he's on the shelf. How do you like their rotation and what they did?
Yeah, I think it was perfect for what they're looking for. These guys are under control for 2-3+ years, and then you can't forget about the Nelson Lamet, who was a Cy Young contender last year. Chris Paddock's another guy who's probably going to be the number five in this rotation, and he was just starting on opening day this past season. So they're as deep as any rotation of the game. The Dodgers might still be able to claim the edge there, but it's going to be a long season. You're going to need a lot of arms, and they've got a few Cy Young contenders, it looks like.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like Keeping Up with the Joneses, though, right? Like, oh, you signed who? Yep. Oh, get what? Watch this. The difference is the Dodgers have their own network, and they can kind of print money more so than the Padres, right? That therein kind of lies the biggest rub.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Padres' media revenue is pretty fixed, like any club, but it's a lot smaller than the Dodgers. So they're really banking on attendance, and we'll see if COVID-19 permits that in 2021. But they feel pretty good that in 2022, maybe they'll be drawing $3 million.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you go to the Gasland District, you have a great time, you see a great park, and now you're going to see a great team. Dennis, thanks so much for joining us, getting up early with us here on the
Dennis,
West Coast. Yeah, go ahead.
I want you to remember, I'm picking the Padres to win the NL West, okay? Remember I said it.
I like it. That's bold like AJ Preller is.
Okay. No doubt.
Thanks, Dennis. Rob, I guess this, like, okay, so there's only one possible reason you don't like the Dodgers, and that's closer, right? Is there anything else you don't like that about the Dodgers?
Oh, yeah, no, they got a great lineup.
Is this just your way of giving praise to the Padres?
I love what the Padres did. I think they were, I think the Dodgers, like I said, they won it 8 years in a row. It's hard to keep that up, and I know it looks like it because they're actually added two pitchers this year. Because remember, Price didn't pitch last year. He opted out for COVID, Doug. So Price joins the rotation, and Trevor Bauer, who won the National League Cy Young Award. So on paper, yes, you can look at it, and the Dodgers are the favorite on paper. But we know things don't always play out that way. There's something about the Padres. I like what they did last year. I think that, and then coming back with what they added to their rotation, their offense. I think their lineup is better than the Dodgers. I do.
Yeah, I mean, it goes hand in hand, right? You got to have the pitchers, you got to have the pitching and the hitting, and obviously they addressed the pitching as well as the hitting this year. You know, the other part that's what's going to be interesting about that is will it resonate? Will people care? Right? It does for the Padres. The Dodgers are a rival. For the Dodgers, they're like, yeah, it's kind of the Giants. You're kind of the little brother. It's not really it's not the mutual respect that there probably should be. There's actually an adversarial relationship between the two, which I think is good for the sport.
Absolutely. And I think, I don't know, did the Dodgers respond to the Padres, to be honest, Doug? And I know they're not looking at the Padres, you know, they made the playoffs for the first time in like 15 years or whatever it was. So, you know, they're in different classes, but when they made all the moves they made, the Dodgers responded by giving Trevor Bauer, whose career record is, you know, 10 games over 500 in his career, making him the highest paid player in baseball for a season.
Yeah, but it's a short-term deal.
It feels
like a smarter deal for baseball, especially for a pitcher.
No doubt. It's a 3-year deal, but he's going to make, what is he making, $40-something million? I mean, it's a lot of money, but I think they responded a little bit. I do. I think they wanted to add a pitcher for sure, but to get Trevor Bauer was a major move by the Dodgers.
You know, the other part that's fascinating is that for a long time there are people, and I was, I mean, if we want to do the humble brag thing, I was like the first guy to go on radio. I did it on my show. I did it on Colin's show, and I said, like, Kyler Murray should play football. And this is, you go back into, like, I think October of his final season at Oklahoma, and I said he should play football. And the logic behind it was, like, everybody thinks of baseball and you think of these, you know, 5 or 6 $300 million plus contracts, okay? But the couple things you have to factor in is, one, yeah, there's a greater number of baseball players and a fewer number. There's either the haves or the have-nots, right? Whereas he's a quarterback, so he's always going to be a have. The other part is that in baseball, your first 4 years, generally, you don't make anything. I like Mike Trout. They reworked his deal. I think he made total like $3 or $4 million his first 4 years in Major League Baseball. So yes, he's going to end up making $400 million at the end of. But in terms of the short term, when you're trying to prove yourself, you know. So, you know, like look, Tom Brady's been doing it for almost 20 years. He's made over $250 million. Like the money is actually going to be as good or greater in football. It's just no one's going to get a, outside of Pat Mahomes, I guess, the longer term deal. This contract changes it a little bit. It does change the math a little bit because he's getting it so much earlier in his professional baseball life.
No doubt. This is uncharted waters. This is different. And other players are you know, have to wait, Doug, to be paid. And the clubs normally don't do it. This is definitely a change, and this will be interesting. And you know what? I'm all for the – I think the Padres did the right thing, and I think, obviously, Tatis was smart to take – somebody offered you $340 million guarantee. I don't know what the question is. Where's the pen? Or I'll cut my finger and sign in blood if there's no pen in the room.
But I think the question does become, like, at what point is it enough, right? Like, I know that everybody wants to make, like, the Padres' sale on this one is longer than anybody else's, right? So at what point is, like, if it was $200 million, you really going to turn it down? They said, hey, we're going to give you 10 years, $200. Would you really turn it down? I mean, I guess you'd be smart to do so, but would you really turn down $200 million? Like, look, we're going to offer you $200 million, or we'll keep you in the same contract for a couple of years and maybe offer you more.
Yeah, but
how much money is enough?
I get it, but you would still, $200 million, you would be selling yourself way short.
You would, but
I understand what you're saying.
In comparison, right. I just, at what point do you, are you sitting there going like, you know, I would have done it for $200. I would have done it for $225. Of course, everybody would have. You know, like, just that amount of money is FU money, and at some point it becomes monopoly money.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Doug Gottlieb, Dan, and Rob Parker in for Dan and the Danettes. This is the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio. Will Blackman is a wine concierge. He's a Super Bowl champion. As a matter of fact, you can follow him at Will Blackman on Twitter, and he joins us now on the Dan Patrick Show. Will, let me play for you what Kevin Coburn, who's the general manager of the Steelers, said about Ben Roethlisberger, and then you tell me, as a former player, what he's really saying. Take a listen.
He reiterated that to us, that he wants to continue to play, and we told him, quite frankly, we have to look at this current situation. With Ben's current cap number, some adjustment will have to be made, and we're not negotiating as we sit here and answer this question. You know, Ben Roethlisberger is on a team. Ben Roethlisberger did a lot of really good things last year, and we anticipate that he could still do some good things moving forward. So hopefully there's a way that we can try to figure out and do what's best for the organization and do what's best for Ben. And hopefully he'll be able to see that and feel the same way we do. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Will, what do you think that means?
Make up your damn mind, Ben. I think they're in a situation where it's like, sure, they would love to have him for another year, and I think he wants to play just one more year. But just know, like, there's gonna have to be some things on the back end that we need to construct. Where it's like, yeah, you can be here, but just know we're trying to get ready for the future. You know, are we gonna have to blow this whole thing up and start over, especially in the offensive end? You know, we lost one player. You know, we need to get better in the run game. We might lose Juju. You know, so they're trying to figure some things out, especially on that side of the ball.
How did Ben look to you last year, Will? I know they were 11-0 at one point.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah, but I don't think it was a convincing. Nobody thought they were going to the Super Bowl, even when they were 11-0. I'm just asking.
They lost two of their best linebackers.
I didn't think they were.
They weren't that good, though, Doug. I'm just
no,
–
no, but they weren't – it's not like they were bad. They were terrible, right? I mean, like, they're a pretty good football team.
I was covering the NFL since 1987. It was the worst 11-0 team I ever saw. That's all I'm going to say. All right, I'm asking Will about Ben. Where is he as a quarterback? Is he still good or not?
Ben is now probably middle bottom tier. I'm not going to say he's not good, because you can't replace that kind of intelligence and experience. Like, he knows what to do. He was smart enough to change his game, whereas, yeah, people got tired of the dink and the dunk, but it was able to help them do what they do. So I think he's still better than most quarterbacks. Is he still like tier one elite? No, he's not. But I think he's still good enough to do what they need to do in terms of him being smart. Again, it's hard when you're not running the ball as effectively, because that's what other teams were able to do. You know, you look at what Tampa was able to do with all their running backs and what have you in terms of moving the ball, running the ball, and all those things. They were able to do that, and that helped Brady. You know, when the Saints are running the ball well, it helped Drew Brees, you know. So that's still a big part in terms of what a quarterback needs.
J.J. Watt said free agency is going to be wild. I don't think anybody was surprised that he either got traded or released. And now he can go anywhere. But what is the – do you want him on your football team? Yes. But how much do you want to pay him? Where does he fit? Like, if you were to advise J.J. on the best fit in terms of style of play and the need for his talents, where would it be?
You know what? I probably find some way to get him up in Seattle. And I literally just thought of that right now. I don't know. I just find some way to get him up there. I think along with Bobby Wagner in that secondary, and yes, they did get Dunlap, but they just need like another force, I believe, on that D-line. And if they're able to find some way to make that work, I think that would be a good place for him.
Where are you on the Russell Wilson public display of ripping his offensive line and basically saying, you know, they're not good enough and I want some say in personnel and all that? It just seemed not that a player can't talk with management. I think it should be a private conversation. But if you're in that locker room or you play on the offensive line, does that go over well?
That's still interesting to me, because that story said it came from his camp. I'm like, no way Russell outright said that himself. That's not him. Like, okay, I have not talked to Russell in a while, but that doesn't strike me as something that Russell would come out and say. So that's
but
why.
But Doug, wasn't it a conversation he had with Dan Patrick, though?
Yes.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
It was on the record. Yeah.
Will, Will saying that just sounds weird that he would say it, but he did in fact say it. I mean,
right? Almost, it was almost as if like he was pressured into saying it. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like he does deserve some say. He's been there for a while, and he kind of knows what he feels or whatever he wants. But, you know, I think it's rather interesting. But I don't think it's that crazy in terms of a big deal. If you don't think things are going well as they are, then by all means, speak on it.
But publicly? You think the offensive line is not trying to block for you?
I don't know. So maybe something like that is what's going to get it done. You know, I'd rather guys just be straight up and transparent. You know, if it happens publicly, then for something like this, okay, you know, get better at your job.
Doug, I want to ask one more question in here about Urban Meyer. And was he damaged, dinked up, whatever we want to term, with the whole Chris Doyle hire, and then he resigned the day after he publicly, you know, push back when people questioned the hire of Doyle and said he was vetted and that they coached together or they were together in Utah, which was a lie. They never were there at the same time. If you're a player in that locker room, a black player especially, how do you look at Urban Meyer, that he was trying to push this guy who came with tremendous baggage from Iowa, and then, you know, the pressure got to Urban Meyer and he had to back down on this?
Well, it goes back to like the constant narrative I've been talking about for years, and that's when coaches like, you know, take over a head coaching job, they end up hiring like people that they trust. They hire in their close friends, they hire in their buddies, versus going out and truly evaluating the scene and finding the best coach for that position, you know. And what happens is that when coaches go out there and they hire their friends because they want to take care of them, a lot of times it backfires. Now, I've never seen it backfire in this regard where the guy never even made it to Jacksonville. But I've seen it where some coaches take it for granted. Like, oh, you know, my buddy hired me, so I'm not going to, you know, I don't need to really do that great of a job because I'm good. I'm taken care of. So it just goes back to that narrative, man, is like coaches just need to go out there and truly survey the field and hire the best people for that position, not so much going out there and hiring their homeboys because that's why they feel comfortable or they want to take care of their people.
Well, I actually think that Doyle was respected as one of the best in the field. And they did have a relationship.
That's fair.
And that's fair, yeah.
So...
Had some major baggage, though. Would you admit that, Doug?
Well, just how it ended at Iowa was bad. There's no question. But again, this is Urban Meyer saying, like, look, I've edited it. The problem was I don't think he had any feel for the public sentiment, whatever is real or whatever is... I know how it reads, but I also know that he was let go, but they had to pay him. So it wasn't like... They fired him for cause and found and could find proof of his behavior so great that he didn't get paid. So there's obviously some gray area to it, right? And there were a lot of great things that were done in Iowa. I don't know about him, the person. This was Urban Meyer saying, I believe in the person. And it was a miscalculation. I could be wrong. I don't think most guys care about that, truthfully.
See, I disagree. I think that I would look at that. And I think that that's why the guy didn't get the job, didn't finish the job. If it was no big deal, Urban Meyer, listen to that.
I didn't say it was no big deal.
Well, but if you listen to Urban Meyer, when he hired him, he pushed back and was like, oh, yeah, I vetted him. I've known him for 20 years. All that went out the window in 24 hours, Doug. I mean, how could that happen? He was so confident that he made the hire and that he didn't think there would be an issue. How could he have miscalculated that much? That means he doesn't know the temperature of the room and the country we're living in. People don't accept that.
But that's where the miscalculation is when you don't know the temperature of it.
Right.
And that's been the norm. That's been the constant narrative of all last year, is that people just don't understand the temperature of the magnitude of what that caused. So I think that comes back to what it was.
Yeah, I'm with Will on this one. Will Blackman join us on the Dan Patrick Show along with Rob Parker. I'm Doug Gottlieb. I mean, because it reminds me of Greg Schiano, right? It was the Greg Schiano was going to go to Tennessee, and then Clay Travis leads some revolt where he links him because he was on the Penn State staff with Sandusky. There's this massive uproar, right? Now, look, Doyle was personally accused of these things, so it is different, but I also think that this is part of the allure to Urban Meyer wanting to be a pro coach as opposed to a college coach is I think that most guys in college think that the pros, it's just a meritocracy. It's just about how good you are. You don't have to worry about class. You don't have to worry about anything. I just go and get players and the best men win, period. But again, like this is where it's changed in the NFL, where there's a lot more to it than just go out and hire a strength coach or go out and hire a coach that you think is the best because of your ability to evaluate.
Yeah, because I think there's been tons of coaches that have been hired in the past that had baggage, but I think now everyone's just way more socially aware and are more inclined to speak up, even going now with quarterbacks wanting to say in personnel. Guys are more aware now. Guys are more, sensitive to these subjects. So that's why it was like, okay, no, he can't come in. Maybe 10 years ago that hire would have been fine, But now it's everything is more magnified in that regard. So that's why they were like, okay, we got to pull the plug on this.
Will, let me ask you about Carson Wentz. Do you think he's fixable?
Yeah, he just needs a new. He just needs a fresh start. That's all. It's that simple for him.
I agree. I don't think that he's beyond repair and he can't play anymore or anything. The Philly situation, and I'm not putting it on other people. He didn't play well. He turned the ball over too much. But there were a lot of issues there, a lot of injuries. They lost all 10 starters on offense last year. 2 years ago, if you remember, Carson with I don't know what receivers he had, Will, they won the division. Do you remember? And he beat the Dallas Cowboys in order to get there. I mean, that was just 2 years ago.
It's hard. And we can say cry wolf, whatever, but it's hard to play in a toxic environment. It's hard to do well in that type of environment, And for him, obviously, you go back to when Nick Foles won the Super Bowl, instead of him because he was hurt. And then whatever happened with, getting a quarterback in second round, and then all the stuff that's going on. So it was definitely a toxic environment. And for someone to say it's not, well, your Super Bowl winning head coach is not there. I mean, he just won the Super Bowl not too long ago, and he's not there. So it definitely was a weird, toxic environment. So it's kind of hard. It's not kind of hard. It is hard to play when, sure, you do have a contract that says you are the future, but there's so many things going around you that you have no idea where you're like, you don't know what's going on. So to go out there and to be super stoic and block everything out and play football is hard. So that's probably why he was going out there and taking chances and trying to sling it and trying to make things happen, because he couldn't control anything else. So I just think for him, he is a good quarterback. He's very skilled, very talented. That same year they won the Super Bowl, he was leading candidate MVP before he got hurt. And so I think he just needs a new fresh start.
Okay, help me out with this one. Matt Stafford is in L.A. How much of an upgrade over Jared Goff is that?
I think it's a huge upgrade for the simple fact that I think everyone who has played against Stafford, you respect the danger of what he can do with the football. I think Jared Goff is a good quarterback. Obviously, led his team through it, but I just feel like nobody was afraid of what he can do. Like, it's not like, okay, we got to go out there and we got to stop Goff. No, it was, we got to stop Gurley. We got to stop them from running the football, because if they can run the football, then they're able to work their play action game and do all these things where, and also if the play breaks down, no one's not sure if Goff can go out there and throw the football off script, where Stafford, it doesn't matter. You know, I put him in that tier with Aaron Rodgers, with Mahomes, now Josh Allen, who can just take the football and sling it wherever they want. You know, that's the type of player he is.
I think Matthew Stafford is way overvalued. I watched his career from day one. He never beat any good teams. They never won a division.
Okay,
Matthew Stafford's
I'm gonna give you, and
people always say, just blame the Lions. He played with a first ballot Hall of Famer and a wide receiver of Calvin Johnson and Dominican Sue and them. They had and Nick Fairley. They had a fifth ranked defense 1 year. His record against teams over 500 is 10-66. I watched this guy, and a lot of his numbers, that's why on Detroit radio, people call him Stat Patford. A lot of his numbers come after they fall behind after two or three touchdowns and defenses soften. He's not this great quarterback that people keep acting like, oh, it's not his fault. Everything that happened in Detroit was everybody's fault except Matthew Stafford. This guy was the first overall pick in the draft, and he hasn't won a playoff game in a dozen years. And Matt Stafford has to get some of the blame.
Preach!
No, that's fair. He can get some of the blame. Exactly, some of the blame. But the ones who are vouching for him, the one who truly understand like what he can do, are the ones that have played against him.
Yeah,
we can throw all these numbers in. We can say all these things like he hasn't won or the team hasn't won. They've been through like, what, three head coaches already, trying to figure those things out. They got a new GM, all these things. And at the end of the day, guys who have lined up across from Stafford, they know exactly what he can do, how scary, how talented he is. Because that's, I'm telling you, man, and I'm speaking from experience myself, being in Green Bay, playing against him, you know, even when I was in Washington playing against him.
How many times did he beat you when
you were
in Green Bay?
Hold on, wait. But Rob, what Will is politely saying is that sounds great on radio, right? But all that matters, you're worth what somebody's willing to pay you.
I get that point, Doug.
And the L.A. Rams.
I don't think you do, Rob.
What the LA Rams are saying is, Rob Parker, we hear you. We completely disagree with you.
He played
in systems that didn't challenge him. He didn't have a running game. He didn't have a good enough roster. Nobody wins it alone in the NFL.
Okay,
and they think you're wrong.
And you know what? The trade will be a bust when he doesn't win a Super Bowl, because
you
that's the only
trade
he's
to win a Super
there.
Bowl.
He's got to win
about?
A Super Bowl. They went to a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. If they don't get to a Super Bowl and win it, what's the difference? The difference is Matt Stafford has to win a Super Bowl. Otherwise, what's the difference? Jared Goff had the fifth greatest offense with the Rams. They went to a Super Bowl. They got undressed by Bill Belichick. I get it. He's regressed.
No, actually, they got undressed by the Chicago Bears that playoffs. That's why everyone now has the blueprint on what to do against Jared Goff. That's exactly what happened. It was the Bears. And the difference is that I don't think they'll be able to do that with Matt Stafford. They are in a win-now situation. They're like, okay, we need to figure this out. We're in a win-now. That's why like they have all these players that they're trying to figure out. And I'm also sure that when the new GM Brad Holmes went over to Detroit, him and Les Snead made some kind of a deal. I'm going to help you out. You help me out. My window is closing. You got a new opportunity. They're going to figure it out. That's what it was. And to answer your question, Stafford went down the field in the fourth quarter and actually beat us. So, yes, he won that game in 2015 or 16. I can't remember. It was 16, excuse me.
Robbie, listen, this is like me talking to an NFL GM, tell him what I think. It doesn't really matter what I think. It's what the league thinks. And the league completely disagrees with you.
No,
and it's also you don't have to win a Super Bowl.
That doesn't make any sense.
You don't have to win a Super Bowl for the trade to make sense. Hold on.
Yes,
you don't
it
have to
does.
Win. No,
that's why you made the trade. You're trying to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
you
you're
believe
trying to put yourself
Matthew
in...
Stafford is the missing piece, Doug.
Hold on.
Right, no, and that's why they made the trade, because they value him more
correct
now.
Will the Rams win the Super Bowl with Matt Stafford in the next two years? No, that's not what I asked you. I asked you, will they win the Super Bowl?
Do you know how many things have to go right for you to win a Super Bowl?
I get that. I'm asking.
No, you don't.
Yes,
apparently you don't. You keep saying I get that. No, I get that.
Will they win the Super Bowl? Yes or no is the answer, Will. Yes or no?
I can't answer that right now.
Why?
Because you don't know about
will they win the Super Bowl? Yes or no?
You don't know about the rest of the league.
It's a team thing. Right. It's John Johnson.
There's 53 dudes. Right? Like, look, I think we would all, well, outside of you, Rob, everybody else agrees that Tom Brady is the winningest, most successful. He brings winning to it. But a lot of other things have to go your way in order to win a Super Bowl. He don't win a Super Bowl unless he's got that dynamic front four that he has in Tampa. He doesn't win a Super Bowl unless he has Malcolm Butler make play. Like, you don't do it all by yourself. But the Rams said, like, look, we're winning in spite of our quarterback play. We want to get a guy who we can win sometimes because of our quarterback play. We feel like he's limiting the growth of our wide receivers, of our young running back. And that doesn't mean you'll win a Super Bowl, and it doesn't make the trade a bad trade if you don't. If it puts you in a better position than you were previously, and you're willing to take on the financial ramifications of moving off a guy where you still have to pay dead cap money, then it's the right move. That's it. It's not the black-white thing of, well, you either win a Super Bowl or it's a failure. Green Bay season wasn't a failure. They didn't win a Super Bowl. They had the best record. They lost in a close game in the NFC Championship game.
Green
That's not
Bay
the way sports
season
works.
Was a failure. Yes,
no, it wasn't.
It was. Yes,
it no,
was.
Wasn't. I mean, Will, was Green Bay season a failure?
Green Bay season was a failure.
Thank you very much.
Listen,
yes,
it,
Doug, it,
it
was.
No, here's the thing. It was because they were a few plays away last year. In the same situation. And then they go back this year. You got the MVP. He's playing out of his mind. And then you let, you know, Tampa do their thing. So I think for Green Bay, it was a failure because they're a team, too, that's super close where, like the Rams, they can make a couple of adjustments this year, this offseason. So for Green Bay, it was because they were the team that was primed to go ahead and get this done. A lot of teams had them ready to rock and go right in there. So I think for them, it was a failure.
Maybe here's a better parallel, right? Okay, so the Tampa Bay Buccaneers thought, if we can get a quarterback that just doesn't turn the damn ball over, right? Okay, that's what's limiting.
It wasn't Super Bowl the bust for Green Bay. So in that terms of a failure, right, it wasn't a failure in that regard. But in terms of them, they should have been, right. Now, if Tampa did not go to the Super Bowl, that would have been an absolute failure because they made a similar decision that the Rams have made. Like, okay, we're done with this guy. We need someone that's going to hopefully get us there because that's what we think we need.
By the way, you can hear Will Blackman on Fox Sports Radio. You can also follow him on social media, and he has a wine podcast as well, right?
The wine MVP podcast. I just released my first episode yesterday.
What's the wine of choice in this episode? Red or white?
It's red. It's a Maris. It's from the family Foley Society. He actually Bill Foley. He owns the Vegas Knights. It's his whole. He has a whole wine collection of vineyards and golf courses and resorts.
All right. Any truth to this? You put together this entire podcast to get free wine. Any truth to that at all?
I already get free wine, so now I'm trying to get paid.
Okay, fair enough. Get paid to drink wine. That is a smart man. That's when you're a smart dude. Will, thanks for joining us, dude.
No, I appreciate you, fellas.
All right, Will Blackman joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
We have breaking news in the National Football League. Breaking news. I had been told by the my friends in the Chicago Bears organization this would happen, and it has happened. The Indianapolis Colts have traded for Carson Wentz. The Eagles trade Carson Wentz to the Colts. This is from Chris Mortensen. In exchange for a 2021 third-round pick and a conditional second-round pick that could turn into a first in 2022. So, assuming he's a starting quarterback, which he will be, the Eagles will eat that dead cap money. He'll play for the Colts, and they'll get a third this year and a first next year. Your reaction, Rob Parker?
Perfect spot for Carson Wentz. Indianapolis, I think, made the right decision. They needed a quarterback, and he had success with Reich. So this all adds up. I'm all for it.
Yeah, he didn't want to play. He didn't want to play for the Bears, and so that hurt their ability. The Eagles kept trying to drive up the price. The Bears had made their offer, kept their offer, but couldn't. You know, they weren't going to budge him. They weren't going to overpay for a guy that didn't want to play there. He couldn't get a first round pick out of the deal.
Doesn't want to play, you know, right, Doug? If somebody doesn't want to be there, you can't force.
Yeah, it's weird though because some of that coaching staff had worked with him in Philadelphia when he had that great season, and it is the same system. But nonetheless, Indy indoors, better offensive line. I think they have a good, not great. Obviously, have a very good young running back, wide receivers. Okay, but look, Chris Bowers done an excellent job. Excellent job. Should be pointed out that the Bears and the Colts actually have the same record over the last 3 years. Exact same record.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, but this, so that means Philadelphia, one would guess, they're in the market to draft a quarterback because as much as I'm sure they like Jalen Hurts, he does not appear to be, by anybody's estimation, a long-term answer. Now, maybe they can ride it out and put a bunch of pieces in place and use that first-round draft pick elsewhere, but most people think they're in the quarterback market.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he had some success, but as they got a little tape on him, things changed, got tougher. I've read all the quotes, anonymous GMs and personnel people who still thought Carson Wentz was a better quarterback, you know, as far as playing that position compared to Jalen Hurts. So maybe Jalen Hurts changes people's minds. Maybe Philadelphia does something that people don't expect, and it changes. If not, then they'll be looking for somebody else.
Yeah, no, listen, it's super interesting. Wentz in Indy, that, I mean, like, look, they're not giving up a ton for him, and that allows them to continue to shop and use their other picks. You know, for it's only a third round pick this year, so they continue to be able to load up. Obviously, Jacksonville feels like they're in rebuild mode. Then you have Houston. Do they completely scrap it or they build around Deshaun Watson, which is what they say they want to do? But just because you say you want to do it doesn't mean you'll do it. In that division, you know what you're getting from Tennessee. Indy, another year, another quarterback, and another former Frank Reich quarterback, right? Is there anybody that Frank Reich's worked with that he hasn't yet coached? That'll be their quarterback next year. But, okay, so now we've seen three starters change places already in the NFL at quarterback, right? You've seen Goff and Stafford. Wentz wasn't the start at the end of the year, but was the starter. So now you've seen three. When does this end? Last year we saw.
I think there's more, right? I think there's going to be more.
Well, I mean, speculation over Garoppolo, speculation over Darnold. We don't know on Deshaun. We don't know what happens in Chicago. Jameis Winston. Marcus Mariota's kind of got a screwy contract that's got a ton of incentives, so maybe he ends up being stuck with the Raiders. Like, there are other guys out there, which make it really interesting to see where they'll move. We don't know who the Saints quarterback's going to be. Teddy Bridgewater could be the Panthers quarterback, or could be elsewhere, or could just be a placeholder this year. Washington still needs a quarterback. We started by talking about Ben Roethlisberger, whether or not he'll be welcome back. Obviously, it comes down to how little money he'll take. I mentioned Chicago previously. You know, there's, I think it would the be Cowboys still haven't signed Dak Prescott.
Yep, and the Cowboys. There's another one. It's going to be interesting. We might have 10 or 11 guys changing places when it's all said and done.
What's fascinating about it is for the NFL, for the longest time, you talk to NFL people and they'll all say, like, we're not like basketball. You want to turn on the TV and know who's playing for who. That's part of the familiarity that builds our fan bases. And that could completely go out the window with all this quarterback movement.
Yep. It's a different era in the NFL, no doubt about it.
All right, are, Doug, the Colts are the Colts a Super Bowl team with Carson Wentz?
No, not this year.
I think they'll be very much a contender. Last year they were a quarterback away. I don't know if Frank Reich can fix him, but if anybody can fix him, Frank Reich can fix him. All right, we're back tomorrow. Rob Parker, Doug Gottlieb, thanks for listening. This is the Dan Patrick Show.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.